Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me on the Slice of Healthcare podcast. I'm your host, Jared Taylor. Joining me today is Dr. Michelle Stevens. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm trying to figure out what's behind you because it's so cool. And
Ooh, yes. It's
first off, what is that? I have to ask, or I'm not going to be able to ask my other questions.
It is a piece of art. It is called Stick Together. We got this during COVID, obviously, for the meeting. But I don't know if they look like colorful mountains to you, but that is the interpretation that we have. And we have a place out in New Mexico that has gorgeous mountain ranges. And when the sun sets, they turn pink. So it definitely reminds us of the New Mexico sunsets.
That is so cool. Really cool piece. All right, this Thank just you. Became an art show, everyone. So how does it make, that's so cool. Thank you so much, first off, for agreeing to come on the podcast and kind of tell your story. Let's start off, just give us a little bit about your background, and then we'll talk more about Oath and maybe some of the learnings and kind of where things are at and then what's next for you. But let's start with just quick background on you, and we'll go from there.
Great. So yes, I am Dr. Michelle Stevens. I am co-founder and chief nursing officer of Oath Care. And my journey in healthcare started actually when I was 7. One of my earliest memories was when my brother passed away from a congenital heart defect. And the nurses that cared for my brother and my family were so impactful that I wanted to make that same impact for others. So I knew I wanted to be a nurse, went to school for nursing, undergrad in nursing, graduated, went back to the hospital where my brother's defect was, repaired, and worked with a bunch of patients like my brother, there encountered the tremendous amount of stress that parents and children undergo while in the ICU, wanted to actually make a difference in this space, read up a whole bunch on early childhood stress experiences. They're called ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, and their direct correlation with adult health outcomes. And I was like, oh, this is definitely what I want to be doing for the rest of my life, is not only understanding that correlation, but actually intervening such that we make a difference with these health outcomes. So became a primary care nurse practitioner, worked in a big metropolitan practice, got to go back to my alma mater, teach pediatrics, took a bunch of students over to South Africa for care for women and children, delivered babies there. It was super impactful. And in the primary care setting, I became really familiar and up close and personal with the challenges of our broken healthcare system and how we fail women and children specifically, right? So with 80 to 85% of a child's neurobiology formed before the age of 5, we're over here measuring and tracking only their height, weight, and head circumference. With women who are lactating, we're telling them contraindication this, black box that, half the dose this for your kids without really any good scientific research behind it. And it's because less than 3% of all NIH funding goes to women and children. So these are the things that I'm like, and then I had my up close and personal issues with raising kids in the US. My goodness, I had 0 paid parental leave. I had undiagnosed postpartum depression that led me to my deepest and darkest point of my life, even as a clinician. And I felt very alone and isolated, moved away from my family. We're a 2-income household. So all of these things I felt personally around my journey, had multiple miscarriages, went through all of it. So all of that, I was like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and try to affect the research with my own research and affect practice in that way. So went back to school, went to UCSF, got a PhD in early childhood stress physiology, got connected with the foremost researchers in this space, and came out of that PhD actually not being like, yay, I want to like move the science further on this and like be a lifelong academic and researcher. I came out like mad. and on fire for being like, why isn't this out in the clinical setting? We have an incredible amount of knowledge around actually understanding stress physiology in kids and knowing that we can have some quantifiable data that can help us create more like really narrow interventions that could massively improve health outcomes for the future. Wasn't seeing any of this in clinical practice. Tried to find it in other even biotech companies, Apple, Google. They all looked at me like I had 10 heads and decided to build it on my own, and found my incredible co-founder serendipitously in the back of a Chinese restaurant in San Francisco, and we're off to the races.
I wonder how often that happens, finding your co-founder in the back of a Chinese restaurant.
I don't think it happens enough. And
that's the better
way. There needs to be more serendipity around co-founder relationships, because I think we're forcing it.
Yeah, it's it sometimes ends up having to be like you try to. It's kind of like dating, right? Sometimes you try to like maybe force a relationship. Like I want to like this person, but it kind of has to happen just naturally.
I think it's either a natural serendipitous, like, you know, work together, really date each other well, or I've known this person for 10 plus years. You know, they've been my ride or die. Like, you know, it's either that or, you know,
yeah,
needing to really
though.
Build.
Yeah. That's well put. So, okay. So you started Oathcare.
Yeah.
I'm sure like so many founders, many, many ups, probably a lot more downs along the way, because that's just entrepreneurship, sadly. And then, you know, you and I connected. I saw that you put an announcement that, you know, with kind of heavy heart that you ended up having to, you know, shut down the company. And you were so great to agree to come on because we want to kind of talk about some of that. Yeah. I think, you know, maybe people on the outside don't know this, but anyone that's been an entrepreneur, they realize like the likelihood of that, it is a very high likelihood that it won't work out. And we still do it. We still jump into the burning building, hoping that, you know, we can put out the flames and create something, you know, special. And sometimes it's out of our hands. Like you can do everything right. And either the market or timing, it's a bunch of different factors. But what we're going to talk a little bit here today was, let's talk a little bit about kind of, first off, give us the high level, what you think happened in the space that this
Sure.
resulted in, you know, you having to shut down. And then maybe what would you, I guess, do differently? And then the third piece is, let's just stick with that and we'll go from there.
Sounds good. Well, let me give you a quick high level about what Oath was up to. Oath was a digital health app that served pregnancy through age 5 with expert medical advice from a wide array of specialists paired with fellow parental emotional support. Because we believe fundamentally parents want that tried and true anecdotal wisdom from fellow parents, like what can I do in the scrappy and the here and now with the resources I have? Also knowing the evidence, scientifically proven, you know, doctor level intervention. They're not always able to be done. And so we wanted to meld the two. We also were on a mission to decrease parental stress. Parental stress is such an issue. And it is something intergenerationally that we are just becoming more aware of, but it passes down and it causes all sorts of health issues. And so by answering questions, by even modeling the ways in which we communicate with each other, we were hoping and wanting, and we did actually decrease stress significantly in parents. Okay, so we started 4 years ago, you know, about 6 months before COVID. We were actually wanting to be the one medical for pediatrics. And so we wanted brick and mortar services with a whole bunch of holistic services within it, with new diagnostics to be run for kids, and really supportive communities that would stem from the pediatric office. Before we launched, a whole brick and mortar space, we tested our product and services on WhatsApp and Zoom. And when we matched these groups, just inherently based on experience, on date of birth, on location, on work status, and we put a bunch of nurses, doctors, lactation consultants, mental health therapists in these groups, we started to understand, oh, this might be actually it. This is the product, right? Like the accessibility, the comfort at my fingertips, sort of access to both fellow parents going through a similar stage with the people that can actually help me, and having the information be holistic, not contraindicated or contradictory to each other, not siloed. And many to many are benefiting from this rather than a one-to-one interaction, which is what our current healthcare system is. So COVID hit, no one was building brick and mortar. We decided to fundraise and launch groups, did that very successfully, and then started running into the issue of scaling, right? Like, how do you scale groups when we didn't even have a captive audience? We were building the community, of course, like, you know, you're flying the plane while building it. But like literally in this case, what I think we didn't do well is find a captive audience or have a captive audience first before we then segmented them into these, you know, highly intimate, highly matched groups. Okay, we started then having more of like a top of funnel. So we wanted to build that distribution channel. So we created this big top of funnel where we would bring people in and kind of have everyone in a similar space, but have chats be very topic-based. So topic-based on maybe age or stage or a certain like life experience, whether it be mental health or potty training or feeding, that sort of thing. And they were trucking along. I would say the groups were the things that had our highest NPS, that had our highest sort of stickiness, had our highest sort of like parents couldn't stop talking about it. So really, I have to say, like, while we wanted to solve for distribution and build it, looking back, we should have gone with like, hey, what to expect? Do you want what we have, like a layer of community and group care that your audience needs, or, that sort of thing, having like or flow or, outlet, like, can we then build on top of your existing audience? And I don't think digital health actually does this well enough. Like, we're seeing just such a boom of digital health since COVID. And I think now we're starting to see like some consolidation and some partnerships that are, I think, hopefully going to create some really incredible things moving forward. But we've siloed the market even more, creating more just waste, quite honestly, around care.
Yeah, I think, so obviously digital health, like most digital health companies, took off during the pandemic. It made a ton of sense, right? And I think, you won't be alone. I feel like a lot of these digital health companies are going to they're going to struggle, like, unless they have those core partners that you're talking about to be able to take those next steps. Scaling up is going to be difficult for a lot of them, which we've already seen some consolidation, right? Either companies shutting down, or there's acquisitions, or they're merging. I've actually been seeing a lot more mergers, right, between companies mm-hmm. that are like, let's team up and see what we can do here. And we'll see what happens, but the outcome might be the same. They might team up and be in the same situation. So I guess in your post, you said there was something, would you do it again? And I think it was like, I don't know, right? At the time you wrote that. If you were to do it again, what are some of those key learnings? Maybe, well, first off, it's always easier the second time, because it's putting everything together happens like that, like in terms of just the legal and all the, like, but what would you do differently? I guess, what were the biggest learnings that you took away from this experience is my question.
Sure. I understand that, like, you know, second time founders are so much more attractive, you know, to fund than first. I think what I'm learning is that it's just a different set of challenges that second time founders have. We're like, I'm actually more jaded. I'm actually more like not as optimistic, right? Like I'm actually more, and maybe that's good in a lot of ways, because I think to kind of discredit my optimism a bit, I think what I wanted to do, what we were after at Oath was actually to like dismantle the system. Like, let's just burn it all down because it sucks. And let's build a new model of healthcare. And a new model of healthcare rooted in community, a many-to-many experience, right? Many providers helping many patients at the same time, where we can be vulnerable and messy, and that there's not this hierarchy, and like care can just be expressed, and it doesn't have to be billed and coded. Okay. All right. So in that, my learning is you can still burn it down without having to be all disruptive, right? Like there's this incremental disruption that can happen where like, maybe you're compromising this. Maybe you're not doing that out the gate, but maybe it's more of like a all about timing or all about kind of like, what can I do first that will then lead to the ultimate good? So that is definitely a learning that I have understood. I think honestly, well, first of all, I want to say I'm still processing the learnings. I'm still taking them in. It's only been a couple of months, but my biggest learning with my original post was like, I'm sad and I'm just sad. And that's where I am. And like, can I actually accept myself for being sad? Because I think our world is not okay with sadness or is not in touch with their sadness such that it's actually really deserving us. And so what I really wanted to show was that it is okay to be sad and just sad. And that maybe there's just so much to learn and to be in our sadness. Because what I did ultimately say was like, what if heartbreak like leads to love? Like, what if that is like the gateway to love? And so I really want to encourage folks to kind of sit in the heartbreak, be in the heartbreak and not have it. Cause we hear this all the time, like couched in like, oh, but here are all my learnings and oh, here are all the successes and here are all the things that I'm now doing instead of doing Oath. It's like, no, I'm not. And so this is just as much my work as I hope, you know, others, but, it's something that I've seen in the landscape of not just digital health, but across, startups that I'd like to see more.
That's well said. Yeah. I mean, before we wrap up here, I'll just quickly say, you know, we talk about first-time founders, second-time founders. The advantage a first-time founder has is that constant optimism around everything, right? That you don't know, it's that, like, you don't know what you don't know yet. And now, you know, you get to that, like, conscious, like, second time, conscious competence or unconscious competence, right? If you can get to that. But now you know the pitfalls and, you know, you're, like you said, you're a little bit more jaded about certain things, not to say that it can't work out even the second time. Right. Cause it's still, that experience is so valuable no matter how you spin it, but, mm-hmm. that optimism is a powerful thing. But, I really want to thank you for joining us here, shedding some light, and we need to get you on, maybe do some guest hosting or something. You're so calming when you talk, so let's do this more.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. Thank you, Jared.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here today.